Before we go on, just one thing about last time. We were talking about the Heter Mechira for Shvias, for Shemitah, versus the Heter Mechira Chametz on Pesach. So one big difference that I forgot to mention, of course, is that there is a precedent in the words of Chazal themselves for Mechira Chametz, but there is none whatsoever for Heter Mechira for Shemitah. Mm-hmm. The Tosefta in Pesachim says that if you, in an emergency situation, if you're on a ship, and you, it's right before Pesach, you can sell your chametz to a goy, and then you could buy it back afterwards. Mm-hmm. But the question is, maybe this is only if you really have in mind to sell it, you said, and then you just buy it back afterwards, not if you have this intention every year that everybody knows that you're going to, this is just to get rid of the Isra Bal Yira Bal Yimatze on a Pesach. There are even Rishonim who write, I think the Ritva, if I'm not mistaken, who writes that explicitly that, yeah, this in from this Tosefta you learned that you could sell your chametz to a goy, but if people start doing this every year, then you punish them. Mm-hmm. You punish them and you forbid their chametz from consumption after Pesach because of a knas, because of a penalty, that they took advantage of this heter every year and makes a mockery of Bal Yira Bal Yimatze. Okay, maybe our mechiras chametz is better than it used to be. We don't really pass like this, etc. We have their reasons... There are reasons to be matter, as I said last time. But anyway, that's a big difference between even those. You can say, well, you can't just say necessarily, well, I rely on the Mechiras Chametz for Pesach, so when I go to Israel, I'm going to rely on Heter Mechira for Shemitah. It's two different shilas and have to be judged accordingly. Mitzvah Pei Hei, the 85th mitzvah, is Mitzvah Shvisa B'Shavis. So, wait a minute, you're going to tell me we just learned this in Parashas Yisro. It talked about that you have not allowed to do Malach on Shabbos, there's a lab, so why do we need an Aseh? Also, there are technical ramifications of this, that when there's an Aseh and a Los Aseh together, so it's harder to be Dochet, sometimes we have a principle called Aseh Doche Los Aseh, then you have a positive commandment and a conflicting negative commandment, then the positive commandment wins. So, for example, you have the mitzvah of tcheles, tzitzis and tcheles, and the mitzvah of shatnez. So the problem is, you have to put tzitzis with tcheles, which are made of wool, on a linen garment with four corners. So then we have a principle called asei docheles, asei the mitzvah of tzitzis, knocks out the mitzvah of shatnez. So you can put the wool tzitzis with tcheles on a linen garment, technically. There might be rabbinical restrictions on that, but that's a technical halacha. Yeah.
Tzitzis becomes pasul accidentally, then
that's a problem. But here when we have an asei and a los asei about Shabbos, so it's harder to be doched. So the Sefer Chinuch says lishbos mi malacha biyom haShabbos. In addition to the negative commandment not to do malacha on Saturdays, Friday night, Saturdays, shemar biyom haShvi'i tishbos, on the seventh day, you shall rest. Kolin Yana, Kasu Lamala, I explained everything above when we talked about the Losase, Balav Habalze, when I talked about the prohibition of doing Malachan Shabbos, V'nichbol HaMitzvah Shabbos Ad Yud Beis Bamim. The Mitzvah Shabbos was repeated in the Torah about 12 times. So we see how important the Mitzvah of Shabbos is when it's repeated so much. There are other Mitzvahs that are repeated many times in the Torah, so this shows that it's of great importance. One of the things that we derive from the mitzvah saseh of Shvisa B'Shabbos, B'yom HaShvi'i Tishbos, is that even things that are not technically usher on a deraisa level on Shabbos, that are not absolute melachos, you're not supposed to do on Shabbos. So when the Rambam writes, Rambam has an extremely organized section on Hilchos Shabbos in the beginning of Sefer Zmanim. Look, it's a contrast that to the... Contrast that to the Shulchan Aruch, which is extremely disorganized. All the laws of Shabbos completely in random orders and rises their abundance together. It's completely jumbled up. Later Sfarim tend to reconstruct the order of the Rambam, like the Chayodam. Not exactly the order of the Rambam, but they go in basis of Melachos. In order of, there's this basic concept, and these are the derises, and these are the abundance, you get a much more conceptual understanding. If you read the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Shabbos, you have no idea what's going on. You just have to memorize all the rules by rote. But the Rambam has, first he discusses, he goes in the order of the Malachos, all the Malachos, and he discusses what's Aser Deraisa. Then, after he finishes that, he goes again, he says, what's Aser Derabanan under the category of each Malacha. So as when he begins his section of the Derabanans, he says, Nemar b'Torah tishbos, the Torah tells us, you shall rest, even from things that are not melachos, and Chazal assert many things based on this principle. So from the Rambam, it sounds basically like this was just an influence to the Chachamim, who that they made many extra rules about Shabbos that are not specifically the Oraisa rules. So based under this rubric, Chazal enacted all of their takanos, they had two different types of rabbinic enactments, as the Rambam writes. One is that there are things which are malachos on a deraisa level, derabanan level, that the rabbanan said on Shabbos this thing is part of this malacha, but on the deraisa level it's not at all. The other things which we are called gezeros, so we have that are gezeros that you might come to violate a certain malacha. So, for example, there are certain things that on Shabbos, like things that are loose, that you're not supposed to wear. Many things that you're not supposed to wear on Shabbos because you might take it off, because it might fall off, and you might carry it in the public domain. So that's not a rabbinic violation of the malacha of Chutzah. That's what we call a gzera. That's just a rule that Chazal made, lest you come to violate the deraisa. But there are other examples of things where this is a violation of the malacha. From other malachos, that this is a violation of the malacha on a derabanan level. So the Chazal were inspired by the Tishbos to enact all these different types of things. However, it seems to be that the Ramban, as quoted here in the Minchas Chinuch, takes it on an even higher level. He really considers this to be part of the principle of Mesaron HaKosuv LaChachamim, which is a very amorphous principle, which means that certain times the Chazal deliberately left certain rules vague, and it's up to the rabbis to come enact the laws on a deraisa level. So, for example, that's the way some interpret the five Inuyim of Yom Kippur, that some say, the Rambam holds that all five are deraisa, but there are Rishonim who hold that only eating and drinking is usar deraisa, the other three are derabanan, and some say it's not that they're derabanan, but it's what we call mesaron hakosuv lachachamim, that the Torah says you shall afflict yourselves on Yom Kippur, and it's not deraisa per se, but Chazal decided that this is what falls within the Torah's purview, so really is a quasi-biblical prohibition. So too, the Ramban seems to hold that these things are mesaron hakosuv lachachamim, that since the Torah says tishbos, which is rather vague instruction, so Chazal, it's up to Chazal to tell us what the Torah means when it says tishbos, you shall refrain from malacha. So these are the things that we should refrain from doing. In the Sefer Lamed Tes Malachos by Rabbi Ribiat, four-volume set, he has a whole description of what Shabbos would be like if we didn't have the Rabbanan prohibitions. You know, that you could go to work, you could write everything with your left hand, if there's something that you couldn't manage to do in an abnormal manner, you could ask a goy to do it for you. You could basically go about your regular business, but we need this more amorphous principle and Chazal to enact the halachos for us that sort of more in the spirit of the day, and to make sure that we really pass by Shabbos in a restful manner. Part of this also is that you're not even things that are usur, that are mutter in terms of malacha purposes, you're still not allowed to do on Shabbos if it's, shall we say, not Shabbosic. So, for example, technically, there's not a violation of any malacha. Let's say you have a huge house and a huge mansion, and you want to move a sofa from one room to another. Maybe it's such a huge house, it's a 10-minute walk from the room that you want to move the sofa to the other room. So you have these people lifting up. It takes so much time to lift up effort to lift up this couch. You're struggling with it, and finally you deposit it in the other room. So you violated no malacha deraisa. It's not hotza because you stayed inside the house the entire time. But still, it's not tishvos. It's not a restful thing to do. You're supposed to rest on Shabbos. You're not supposed to do things like that. That's why some people were complaining that some people take an eruv to mean that you could schlep whatever you want all around town. So that's not really correct. An eruv is not it's not licensed to schlep, again, for a sofa now from one apartment building to another apartment building, or a huge package or something looks like you're bearing a burden. That's not an appropriate thing to do on Shabbos, even if you would be thinking that it's not a technical violation of the Melech HaFotzah. The next mitzvah is mitzvah peivav 86 shaloli shava b'avodazara, that one should not swear an oath in the name of an idol or any other type of non-true deity. Shelo nishava b'shem avodazara afil ovdeha, that we should not take an oath in the name of an idolatry, even to those who worship it. I'm not sure exactly what the havamin is. Just because you're taking an oath for someone, let's say you work with a Hindu, and the Hindu wants you to take an oath that to swear in the name of his deity that something with a business. Obviously, you can't do that just because this is a person you're dealing with is someone who worships avodah zarah. Of course, it doesn't allow a Jew to take an oath in the name of Ozara. It's also not allowed to take an oath in the name of Ozara, but putting that aside for a second, I'm not sure exactly why that should be the case. Yeah, but if you're talking about Ben Adam Lachavero, if you're talking about a court case, so you know that and he wants you to swear that you didn't steal his object, or that you don't owe him money, that he thinks you owe money, and you're going to swear that he doesn't owe money, so he knows you're not going to take the oath seriously, so why would he care? In other words, maybe he'll think his God is going to punish you, but you don't think his God is going to punish you, so anyway. Velo nashbia legoy bezeh, we should also not administer an oath to a goy in the name of an avodah zarah, because of course avodah zarah is one of the seven mitzvos b'nei Noach. All the abizrayu avodah zarah, all the types of things associated with avodah zarah are asur to a goy as well. Shneimar v'shem Elohim acherim lo sazkiru, you shall not mention the names of other gods. Uvichol hazkara shemanu bein nishba bein mashbia. It's all included, whether it's this person takes an oath or administers an oath in the name of avodah zarah. The yesh mifarshim, they're those who explain sheikar lavze einu ba ela b'osekim hagoy b'yom edo umarvicho da'azel umoda, that the main point of this lav is to warn us that we should not do business with idol worshipping goyim on the days of their festivals, because then if he makes a profit or he's happy with your business deal, then he's going to go thank his idolatrous deity. The ka'avar al lo sazkiru, you violate the mitzvah of lo sazkiru, you should not mention the names of other gods. Kolomar shelo yazkiru machirim al derech hazkara ha'asur lahem, that other people should not mention it on the way that in a way that's forbidden to them. Dahainu al das la'avdam shu asur af lahem gam ke min ha'Torah, that it's also asur v'goyim to worship avodah zarah on a daraisa level. Shebnei Noach musharim al avodah zarah, it's one of the seven Noahide laws. So Minchas Chinuch says, I don't understand. How could this be the ikar of the prohibition? Obviously, if it's forbidden to administer an oath, why would this is a more indirect manner? In other words, the more indirect manner is that you do business with a goy, and then the goy goes to thank his avodah zarah. So how is that the ikar ha'isar? Obviously, the ikar ha'isar is that you're not allowed to take the oath, and you're not allowed to administer the oath. I mean, that's a huge machlokas, yeah. But we normally assume that it's basically not
let's
for goyim.
Let's
take the Hindu, yeah. Yeah, Hindu is a better example. It's huge machlokas whether Christianity is considered avodah zarah, not exactly the parameters. So you're asking, but that's too far already. You'd say you're never allowed to do business with them. That's a little bit too far. The first Mishnah in Avodah Zarah says, Lifnei Yedeyam Shel Goyim Shlosha Yamim Asar Laseis V'Laseisim Ayim, that 3 days before and after, for the matter of fact, a non-Jewish festival, you're not allowed to do business with them because of this concern that they're going to go thank their Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara explains that this is only in Eretz Yisrael, the 3 days before and 3 days after. In Chutz Laretz, so it's only usher on the actual day of the festival itself. But in any case, so the Rambam actually writes that in Eretz Yisrael, because the Rambam holds Christianity is avodah zarah, so the Rambam writes that in Eretz Yisrael, of course this passage was censored out in the printings that we have nowadays, but in all the manuscripts of the Rambam, it has the correct halacha, that the Rambam writes that it's forbidden, in Eretz Yisrael, it's forbidden to do business with Christians for the entire week, basically, because they have in Yom Eid, they have a festival day every Sunday, so 3 days before and 3 days after eliminates the entire week.
Yeah.
And in Chutz
itself, so
right. So the Rambam would hold that in Chutz Laretz, so we're not allowed to do business with Christians on Sundays. But nowadays we assume that they won't. It's not the same perspective that the goyim have on these things. So it's not really. First of all, we Right, Toisus, first Toisus and Vodazar already limits it. It's not a problem with Christians. This whole prohibition is not a problem with Christians. And second of all, yeah, they're not as religious as they used to be, so we're not as careful about this. Ve'od hosifu zichronim livrocha harchoka, that the sages added an extra fence around this prohibition. Ve'amru b'sanhedrin shelo yomar adam lachaver shmor li b'tzad avodazara plonis. You shouldn't, in other words, Chazal added the prohibition that you shouldn't mention the name of Avodah Zarah at all, basically. So you're not supposed to use it as a landmark. So you're not allowed to say, you know, wait for me by the church. You should say, wait for me
at the corner of
Washington. Right. Exactly. You should wait for me at that corner.
Right. Boyer's taught that. So we can say, wait by the church. Mm-hmm. Say, wait by Fort Washington 181st.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you shouldn't use it as a landmark to mention it in any manner that gives it chshivas or a necessity. Okay, b'shor she'a mitzvah, the reasoning for the mitzvah, l'harchik kol inyan v'razara bein b'maisa bein b'dibor ad shelo yala zichra bilvavenu l'olam, which the point of the mitzvah is to distance us from avodah zarah to the extent that we should never have it in our minds at all. But hishkichu rabosenu zichron abrocha v'amru sheva mem dalet mekomos hizirasnu atorah aleh l'rov miyusa, that apparently the Torah warns against avodah zarah in 44 places. Seva chasho, because it's so disgusting, so go think about that. That's 44 places forbidden, so we should take it extremely seriously. Midini ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Mash amru shafil ha-hazkir shem avodah shelo b'darach shvo asur. So you're not allowed to mention the name of an avodah zarah, even not in the manner of an oath. V'shekol avodah zarah haksuva b'sifrei hakodesh mutar l'hazkir shma, that if it's written in the Bible, the specific, you can mention it, obviously. Kigon po'or uval val nevo v'chayotze b'hen. Baal, rather. Baal u'nevo v'chayotze b'hen. That all the names of the idolatries are all mentioned all over the Bible, so you're not supposed to skip it when you come to the laning and, you know, you just skip that word. No, if it's written in Kisvei Hakodesh, that means God wants us to read it that way for whatever reason. So not to worry about that. Also, the other heterim, like nowadays, that there are many avodah zarahs that are not worshipped anymore, so we're not careful not to say those, like Zeus, for example. Nobody worships Zeus anymore, so it's, I mean, again, I don't know if you should go around throwing it around, but just to mention it like that, so it's not really a problem. Also, I told you, I think, the famous story about... famous in my circles. About how my Rosh Yeshiva gave a shir on Asar Batavis, and he's about this exact topic of mentioning the names of Avodah Zarah. So he said at one point, Rabosai, what do you say? Is it mutter to say Jesus? So somebody raised his hand and said, well, Rebbe just said it. So,
also,
anyway.
Well, it depends on the context, because with an Hispanic neighborhood, there are a lot.
Jesus. Yeah, so that's the... Right, that's the reason you're allowed to say it, is because it's also a name of a person, the person who lived 2,000 years ago, and a lot of people are named that nowadays, so it's not anything that's also the name of a person, not specifically the name of Avodah Zarah.
I thought the problem was more saying the anointed one.
Right.
Yeah, last name.
Right, you're not allowed, that's one thing, you're not allowed to mention the name in any way that gives it chashivas or importance. So, for example, you're not allowed to use it, let's say you... So you hit your hand on something, you hurt yourself, you're not allowed to use the word Jesus as an exclamation. That's actually not permissible. That's something people don't think about, because that's, otherwise, where are you using? Because there's some importance to this name that you're using it as a word. There's also an issue I just saw about the mentioning the names of saints, because saints, I believe, in Catholicism have a little bit more theological significance than perhaps in other types of Christianity. Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. So that's also a question, is whether you're allowed to say, you can say the person's name, because that's a shemish. You could say...
Teresa, Paul.
Right, Teresa or Paul or whatever.
But wait, what if you live in St. Paul, Minnesota? I mean, what's
the... Right, so that's a good question.
Corpus Christi,
right.
Texas. How would you like to live in Corpus Christi, Texas?
So that's a problem. So some... I mean, that's the name of a city. Maybe there's more room to be made, but there are some people who are stringent not to say St. Paul, St. Louis. They say, right, St. Nicholas Avenue, Sluis, Missouri. Sounds like that. Yeah.
Nicholas. he yeah. used to say, and he was not like the class friend.
Oh, wow.
I think he may have said things like Nicholas.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's room for that. There's room to be.
Sandra,
that's a
misnomer.
Yeah,
it turns out actually though does not come from Saint Mary. It comes from a Hungarian name or something like that.
Yeah.
Take a look at Wikipedia.
Yeah, look at Wikipedia. It's from Sandmar.
It is not Saint Mary. That's a you know.
Although Sandmarov apparently thought it was, so he used to say Sakmer. He never said Sandmar. He used to say with a K. Anyway, but yeah, that's a problem. Also, St. Louis was not, that the city's named after was not a saint. He was, he persecuted the Jews.
Oh.
He was a king of France, I think.
He was canonized by the Catholic Church.
Right.
Yeah, he was so easy.
So.
A lot of saints.
A lot of bad guys were canonized by the Catholic Church.
When a city, when a kollel was opened in that particular city, they were taught, say, they should really call it the Louis Yimach Shemo Kollel instead of St. Louis Kollel.
They just call it by its neighborhood.
Yeah. Usher ligrom lacherim shiyidru v'kaimu b'shem avodah zara. You're not allowed to cause others that they should swear and take oaths in the name of avodah zara. Aval eino loke, the only person who receives the penalty of lashes, eloha noder v'makayim b'shema. It's only if you are specifically the one who takes an oath in the name of an avodah zara. Da'inu anishma me'atzmo v'loha mashbia. That the person who takes the oath and not who administers the oath. V'afal pi shamashbia kemochen b'chlal halav. Even though the person who administers the oath is part of the lav on a deraisa level. Hu lefi das haram zichron avracha. Oh, sorry. According to the Rambam, considers this the person who administers the oath to be just as culpable for lav, but yet he does not receive the penalty of malchus. V'yaser protel mevarim b'perek zayin b'sanhedrin, seventh perek of Sanhedrin. V'negis b'chol makom v'chol zman v'zchar m'v'nikevos. Male and females, all places, all times. Over alev v'nishbar, v'nishbar b'dover mikol anivroim shi'aminu b'amakofer ma'scholim. That if you violate this mitzvah and you take an oath in the name of any thing that the deniers, the stupid deniers, believe in, outside hagedula, that they believe that in its greatness, chayav malchus, then you are administered the penalty of lashes, ken kosov arav zichron levracha. So what question are you going to ask me? Should I be jumping on me, screaming at me? It's a lav shein bo maisa. It doesn't have, has no action associated with it. We all know from the Sefer HaChinuch before many times that if it's a lav shein bo maisa, then you don't receive the penalty of lashes. V'afal pi shein bo maisa, the Sefer HaChinuch says, Meirov Chomer Avodah Zarahi, because Avodah Zarah is so stringent, this is an exception to the rule that you're administered the penalty of lashes. By the way, even though you're not administered the death penalty, and it's not in Isra Avodah Zarah in the extent that you, worshipping Avodah Zarah, you're administered the penalty of Skila, yet it's part of what we call Abizraihu Avodah Zarah. That is part of the general category of Avodah Zarah, and as such, this prohibition would actually be subject to the rule of Yehorig Val Yavor. That if you're in a position where you would have to choose between giving up one's life or to just take an oath in the name of Avodah Zarah, so the halacha will be that one will be required to give up one's life, just as for worshipping Avodah Zarah itself. We have all these things that are Abizrayu. So Abizrayu, things that are associated with Avodah Zarah and Giloy Arayos and Shvichus Damim and improper relationships and killing people, all things all in that category are all part of the under the rubric of Yehorig Val Yavor. Hopefully it's not something anyone's going to need to know, halacha l'maisa, but since we're on the topic, we'll discuss it. Yeah, so the question is also, maybe you derive the fact that there's malchus over here from the fact that there is malchus for certain types of oaths, other types of oaths. So since the oath, it's already, malchus already shayach to a category of oath, even though it's a lav shein b'maisa, so here it's in category where it's a particularly severe type of oath, then it's sufficient to warrant the penalty of lashes. Christianity is only not a Avodah Zarah, according to many opinions, for Goyim. That Goyim, the standards of Avodah Zarah that Goyim are forbidden from are less stringent than the standards of Avodah Zarah that for Jews. Yeah. Called Shituf. That it's associating someone else in the Godhead. Yes, you might say. Well, Muslims aren't really of the Avodah Zarah, but yeah.
I mean, like a Hindu.
Although we pointed out, I think a couple weeks ago, that I think I can make a drush out of this, really. That although we assume Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah, because they worship one God, same God as us, they worship, since they worship violence and anger, So we have a principle in Chazal called a koes kilu of Ovid Avodah Zara. So I guess that anyone who gets uncontrollably angry is if he worships Avodah Zara. So lets one's evil inclination take over. So obviously it doesn't technically, halachically change their status, but there's Russia material in there, I suppose.
There's actually a number of scholars, such as, actually including Rosenzweig, in fact, but also some Christian scholars who said, in fact, that that distinguish between a covenantal religion,
which
is like the Judaism and Christianity, and one and basically a natural religion, like the pagan religions where the gods moved in mysterious ways and you tried to propitiate them and they would punish you and and you couldn't question it. It said that Islam, although it does not, specifically monotheistic and so forth, is that the relationship between man and God is in fact idolatrous. Because Allah, there does not has no rules that apply to him. He can change anything he wants to. There's no covenant. There's no bris. You're submitting to Islam means submission to the rules of Islam. So it is an idolatry of the God of Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Right, but is that that's not a halachic statement? That's more a. It's a conceptual thing, philosophical, but I don't know.
Halakhically, they wouldn't have any standing. But,
right.
My impression is that the Christian, where Christian, prays to God.
Yeah.
That the relationship, how shall we say, and the expectations and so forth is not, all that much different than we, than our own. The nature of the relationship, it makes sense to say that it is not all that much different from ours.
Okay. I mean, but they don't have a structure and system of rules, which is one thing.
Just expectations of behavior.
But just expectations of behavior in general, you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, on the topic of koes, one thing I was very struck by in the recent thing is that one of the protests that the Arabs engaged in against the offensive in Gaza was they designated one day for protest, and they called it a day of rage. Like, it's so... To get angry about something is one thing, but to designate something in advance as a day of rage? It depends on the crowd, but there's room for drushy exposition of that. Okay. Mitzvah Pei Zayin is a similar mitzvah. Mitzvah 87. Shalo lahadiach b'nei Yisrael achar avodah zara. Not to try to get Jews to worship avodah zara. Shelo yikra b'nei Adam la'avodas avodah zara. So one person should not call other people to worship avodah zara. V'zara is osam l'kach, and would encourage them to worship avodah zara. V'afabi shezeh ha'korei lo yavdena. Maybe the person who's doing the encouraging doesn't worship them at all. Maybe he thinks it's a joker. I don't know what. But v'lo yaseh la pe'ula min ha'pulos rakakriya bilvadi. Don't do any action per se. You don't try to bribe them, you don't hold a party, you don't physically pull them in the direction of the Avodah Zarah, but rather you simply try to talk them into worshipping Avodah Zarah. Yeah. V'zeh nikra madiach. So this is called somebody who encourages people. That's a technical term. Right, so there's another term called mesis, as we're going to see in a second, what exactly the difference is between mesis and madiach. So we have a lot of people say mesis umediach, because it's what we call analogy. When we have similar forms, a lot of times you start pronouncing them alike. So it's really mesis umadiach. It's different grammatical forms. What exactly the difference is? In any case, v'zeh nikra madiach v'chein amru b'Sanhedrin. Say in Sanhedrin, lo yishama al picha, that the second half of the sentence, shem Elohim achem lo sazkiru lo yishama al picha, this should not be heard on your mouth. Azhara la madiach, this is a warning for a saying that this is a negative commandment applies to a madiach. V'chein amru gamba mechilta, again, they said the same thing in the halachic medrash known as the mechilta. Sharash ha-mitzvah yadua, we all know the reason for this, because we don't want people going around trying to convince other Jews to worship Avodah Zarah. Dineha beperek asiri mi Sanhedrin, the 10th perek of Sanhedrin. Umisha lo hidiach bin yenzel adam echad. If you conduct your activities on a private manner with one person at a time, enu nikra mesis, a madiach ela mesis. You called a mesis, not a madiach. Uveseda re anochi nichto bazharas mesis bezras Hashem belav chaf aleph, where it's, we have a long time from now. It's mitzvah 462. in the order of mitzvos, aval kishem. So a couple hundred to go. Aval kishem adiach, shnei anashim, yoser nikra adiach. If you encourage your activities on a more public level, then it's called Madiach. And that's how we get also the concept of Ir Hanidachas. That's why it's called a city that was all convinced to worship Avodah Zarah, because that's obviously on a very public level. So Ir Hanidachas is a city where its inhabitants were all encouraged to worship Avodah Zarah. So we just had two mitzvos. We have all these things that were just being taken far and far away from Avodah Zarah. Why? The Godel Onish Bo'ad Shenichbala B'mem Dalin Mekomos B'Torah, and the great penalty for this, that you see that it was repeated 44 times in the Torah, V'shetechane HaTorah L'Hashem Baruch Hu Kano Al Ovdeha, that the Torah describes God as being zealous or jealous, however you want to translate it, on those, about those who worship Avodah Zarah. Al Yale B'Libcha Shekinas HaKel V'Harchokos Eilu Nichtevu Zulosi Mitzad Ha'Ovdem, that you should not allow it to enter your mind that these warnings have to do with God himself. Rather, they have to do with those who worship it. And he's going to explain. Ki Hashem Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, God, Bein Sheyavdu Oso Bnei Adam, whether people worship him or not. O Yavdu, Yavdo Malach, O Galgal, O Kochav, O Echad Mikol Beruav. Doesn't matter whether angels worship him or the stars in the heavens worship God, whatever, it doesn't matter. So it doesn't affect God's absolute essence or honor in any way. What does he care? God is unchangeable, as the Rambam expounds this philosophical point very much in his works, that God is completely unchangeable. Nothing, no concrete thing could change God's glory. Certainly not us who are just flesh and blood. All these languages that the Torah uses, zealous God, etc., only talks about the relationship to us. Because when a person completely removes himself from the worship of God, and if you take your body and your mind and you start exploring other things, other nonsensical things, then you're not going to be able to be the vessel for receiving goodness in the world and blessing. Rather, you are now worthy to be the recipient of curses that are the opposite of blessings. Illness, curses, bad things. Because God is the ultimate goodness, so if you remove yourself from God, you've proven yourself unworthy of receiving the good stuff in life. You're going to be surrounded by wickedness all around you. It's really just a matter of sort of proverbial expressions that when you say the God about you, Shu Adona Tova, that God is the master of all good, Nasalo Oyev Otsar Menu Kolatovo. So God becomes like your enemy instead of your supporter, and he prevents you from getting good stuff. It's as if you were dealing with human relationships, it's as if it would be one person got jealous of another person or is zealous about another person's faults and stop providing good things, so you're not going to be able to receive the goodness of God anymore. God is not really an enemy of any creature, and is not jealous of people. At any point God wanted, he could uncreate the world and destroy it and turn it back into emptiness and nothingness. Tovavo. Banachos chefzo bevitol. So in other words, the point is that the whole world exists every moment by the fact that God wills it to exist. But if one second God, it's sort of an active thing. That is not that the world is running on inertia until God decides to actively turn it back into Tovavo, but rather, if any moment God stopped, whatever this means, whatever God decided not to continue creating the world, then the world would go back into emptiness and nothingness the way it existed before the creation of the world. With just a way of our understanding the way God works, on the manner of interpersonal relationships. So the greatest jealousy that exists for between people is when they're, I mean, the greatest hatred that exists between people is when they're jealous of each other. I feel like you have something that I should have. That's a lot of why everybody is jealous of the Jews, for a lot of it, and a lot of why people hate the Jews, rather, because there's a lot of jealousy. The Jews provided a lot for the human race. Oh, mekane beishto biznusaim achirim. Obviously, if one's wife commits adultery, so one's going to be extremely jealous and not be too happy. It's one of the greatest forms of hatred or anger. That's why we use these words in the Torah to describe God. It's not because it's actually a character trait of God, that God physically, whatever, metaphysically, physically, gets angry and is upset and is jealous as to us, but really it's just sort of an automatic thing that if we don't worship God properly, so then if we start we start getting other ideas in our head and start worshiping Avodah Zarah, so we're not metaphysically, again, how this works is leave it up to philosophers, but you're not going to be able to receive the bracha and the blessings that God's being connected to God brings to your life. All places and all times, males and females. But the punishment that is administered to somebody who encourages other people on a mass scale to worship Avodah Zarah, which is the punishment of stoning, that is only to be taking place in Eretz Yisrael, again, not specifically in Eretz Yisrael, but by people who received actual rabbinical ordination and constitute a bezdin in Eretz Yisrael. It could be any place, but they received their actual real rabbinical ordination in Eretz Yisrael from the tradition of Smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Mitzvah Peches, the 88th mitzvah, is mitzvah's chagiga baragolim, which is the mitzvah of bringing a korban chagiga on the three festival days. Lachug baragolim, to make festive, I guess you could translate it on the festival days, but that's specifically by way of bringing a korban. Vushenitz davinu lalos the regel, that we were commanded to go up to visit the Beis HaMikdash, Shalosh Pa'amin Bashana, three times a year. Vehein Samuch LaPesach Ushvus V'Sukkis, right before Pesach and Shvus and Sukkis, Kedei Shenachog Sham, that we should celebrate there. Shenamar Shalosh Regalim Tachog Li Bashana, you should celebrate for me three festive days per year. Umeinyin HaChagigahu Shenale Sham BeKorban V'Nakrivei Ushlamim L'Chvod HaChag. That part of the mitzvah of celebrating, mitzvah's Chagiga, mitzvah of celebrating on the festival days once we've gotten to Yerushalayim, is bringing a shlamim, which is bringing a special type of korban where basically you get to eat. The majority of the meat goes to the owners, so you get to fress you and you get to enjoy with your festival suda, you get to eat a nice roast animal. V'nichbila mitzvah zo pa'amim batorah, that's also why we have, also we ain't simcha ala babasar, that when you say you v'samachta b'chagecha, you're supposed to be happy on the festival days, so you're supposed to eat meat. So the Gemara says explicitly that that's talking about Bisar Shlamim, that's talking about the meat of this particular korban. So the question is, why do we still assume, at least according the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that nowadays you only have to drink wine on Yontif, you don't have to eat meat per se. The Rambam writes that you do have to eat meat. So why should you have to eat meat if the meat that they're talking about is really only the meat of the Shlamim offering? So people give different explanations of the Rambam. It's reminiscent. You see that there's a concept still that eating meat is a yishmaki thing. Also, these things are just examples. Everybody has to do things that they like. So, for example, before Yontif, you're supposed to buy women new clothes, new jewelry, and you're supposed to get kids candy. The Gemara says nuts, because in the olden days, before they had processed sugar, it used to be that nuts and roasted grain were the biggest treat for kids. That was what they looked forward to all the time. Nowadays, that wouldn't be sufficient for them. Nowadays, they want candy. Okay. This mitzvah was explained twice in the Torah. Gemara tells us in Maseches Chagiga, which is obviously appropriately the Masechta that talks about this issue, Shalosh mitzvos nitzavu Yisrael beregel. Three mitzvos are the Jews are required to do every three on all the three regalim. Chagiga Re'iya Simcha. One is the bringing of this korban. One is Re'iya, that is physically showing up. And one is Simcha. Re'iya, I'm sorry, is a different korban, also Olas Re'iya. You have to bring an Olas Re'iya, you have to bring a Chagiga. And Simcha, which is the... right, extra shlomim, extra shalmei simcha, right? And included in that, right, of course. It's an extra korban, but included in that is the eating meat and drinking wine and the new clothes and all these things. Mishor she mitzvah zo, the reasoning for this mitzvah, lefi she'eno bedin lavo biyadayim reikonios lifnei amakom baruch hu. It's not appropriate to show up in the Beis HaMikdash empty-handed. Lo yerufanai reikom, the pasuk says, you should not see my face empty-handed. V'afal pi she'emes ki'eno tzarech davar miyadeinu, God doesn't need anything from us, similarly for to the, what we just discussed in the last mitzvah. I'm not going to get hungry. It's for our midos, our specific, our character traits, that we shouldn't, it's not right to show up empty-handed when you go visit someone. You're closer to goodness more than any other place. The Or Pnei HaMelech Noga Aleihem Sham, that the light of the God's presence shines upon you at the Beis HaMikdash. Keep in mind all these things, especially as we're approaching Tisha B'Av, that all the special aspects that the Beis HaMikdash had. Valkein Roy Lanu Lasos Maisa Korban Maisa, that's why we should bring a sacrifice at that time. Kibe Pula Sakorban Nitakin Le Kabbalah Satova, that we are. We become set, fixed to different gear souls, actually, by the way. L'kabbalah satova, to receive goodness, v'tis'ala nafshoseinu malamala, our souls will soar to greatest heights. K'mo shenichto bezvas Hashem, as we're going to write in the mitzvah tzadi hei, Rabbinian Beis HaMikdash. Midinei ha-mitzvah, ma sha'amru zichronim levracha, shekabanos eilo ein lahem shir, that these korbanos have no shir. This includes... By the way, he's sort of describing all the korbanos, as Chagiga, Re'iya, and Simcha over here, not specifically Chagiga, some of them Farshim point out, because not all the animals that he quotes are appropriate for the korban Chagiga per se. Ela filu echad yaspik, one is sufficient, bein behema, bein of, bein Torah, goes all when there it's a animal or a bird, such as a turtle dove or pigeon, v'shechayev lalos liyushalayim al kolpanim b'korban b'yado b'kesef shiknebo b'korban b'yushalayim. When you go up to Yerushalayim, you either have to have the korban with you already, or you have to have the money to buy it in Yerushalayim. But, aval b'shov v'kesef eino patur. But if you just bring something that has monetary value, but not money per se, then that's insufficient. A lot of times in the Torah, something of monetary value is the same thing as value, as money itself. Like if you could, when you do Kiddushei Kesef, when you get married, so it doesn't have to be a currency, it could be something of monetary value.
Check
is not, is a shtar. It's not, check is not, doesn't have actual intrinsic monetary value. Also for Maaser Sheni, you need real, to redeem Maaser Sheni, which is one of the tithes, you need real kesef, and Shavei Kesef is insufficient. But for most things, then Shavei Kesef, something that monetary value is okay. But the reason that doesn't work over here is because you're two steps removed. In other words, you need to be able to buy the korban immediately. So let's say you bring something of monetary value and there's nobody who wants to buy it, then you're going to be stuck. You're not going to be able to bring your korban. That's why it needs to be actual money or the korban itself. V'im lo hikriv korbano b'yom rishon, the real mitzvah is to offer the korban on the first day of the holiday, she'yesh lo tashlumin kol shiva. But if you don't do it on the first day, then you can make it up any of the following seven days. U'bilvad she'yesh hu sham b'yom rishon, as long as you're in Yerushalayim at the Beis HaMikdash on the first day, so the rest of the time is like tashlumin. So in other words, the mitzvah is chal on you on the first day of the festival, and if you don't do it on the first day, then you could make it up for any of the 7 days afterwards. But if you're not in the Beis HaMikdash on the first day of the festival, then the mitzvah of Chagiga was never chal on you. So you can't say, oh, well, I have the rest of the 7 days to do it, because the mitzvah was never chal. That's why, by the way, it's also a conceptual machlokas or on this vein, what the story is if you miss Havdalah on Saturday night. So we know you're allowed to make Havdalah on up until Tuesday. because that's the week is divided into two parts, the 3 days after Shabbos and 3 days before Shabbos. So once you get after Tuesday, you get into the 3 days before the next Shabbos already, as opposed to the 3 days after the Shabbos that you were supposed to make Havdalah. So let's say you weren't chayiv in Havdalah somehow that Motzei Shabbos, so is intrinsically the time for making Havdalah until Tuesday. So in other words, you can make Havdalah until Tuesday no matter what the circumstances, or it's tashlumen. It's a what's the English for tashlumen?
Makeup,
I guess so. So is it a makeup Havdalah that if for some reason...
Compensatory,
it's good. It's compensatory that if you, for some reason, couldn't make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, then you have until Tuesday to do it. But if you weren't exempt, you were exempt from Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, then you shouldn't do Havdalah until Tuesday. So if this is where does this come into play? You can think of a couple examples, but the most prominent is when Tisha B'Av is Motzei Shabbos. When Tisha B'Av is Motzei Shabbos, so you don't make Havdalah because you can't drink the wine. So there's in Machlokes Rishonim whether you make Havdalah on Motzei Tisha B'Av or not. Some, according to the Ramban, I believe, the Ramban writes that, and other Rishonim write, that one does not make Havdalah on Motzei Tisha B'Av because the fact that you can make Havdalah until Tuesday is only Tashlumen. That's when you didn't have wine or something on Motzei Shabbos and you couldn't make Havdalah Oivei, but you were actually obligated to make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, then you can make it up until Tuesday. But if you're completely exempt from Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, then because you couldn't drink, because Tisha B'Av, you don't make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos and Tisha B'Av. So that time, that's it. There's no Havdalah that week. But we don't pass in like that. We pass in that Be'etzem, basically the intrinsic time for making Havdalah is until Tuesday. So we do pass in that when Tisha B'Av is Motzei Shabbos, one does make Havdalah on Motzei Tisha B'Av on Sunday night. That's the way it works. You have to be there when the mitzvah is chal. Because really, that's when you're supposed to be there. You missed it. You're supposed to be there the entire yontif. And the fact that it has tashlum in 7 days, by the way, is very interesting. You understand on Sukkot and Pesach that it's all yontif. It's all chol hamoed, it's all yontif. You understand why there's tashlum in the entire 7 days after the first day, if you missed it the first day of yontif. But for Shavuos, that's strange. But Shavuos is strange. Why should first day on Shavuos? Why could you make it up for the next 7 days after Shavuos? There's no, that's not Yontif at all. That's nothing. So it's just because they were for this din, Chazal or not, that all three of the holidays are the same in terms of the time frame of bringing the Korban Chagiga. And that's why there are some places that have the minhag that they don't say Tachanun for 7 days after Shavuos, because these are all days where these are days that you could bring the you could have brought the Korban Chagiga. If you didn't bring it on Shavuos, you could bring it for the 7 days afterwards. This is part of the. There's a machlok is a general between the Ashkenazi minhag and what we call the Sephardi Hasidish minhag, which is penetrating our circles nowadays also, which is that in the Ashkenazi minhag, you only don't say Tachanun on days that have religious significance now. Mm-hmm. So in the minhag Ashkenaz, you say Tachanun on the 7 days after Shavuos, because there nowadays there's no Beis HaMikdash, there is absolutely no religious significance whatsoever to the 7 days after Shavuos. And we also say Tachanun on Pesach Sheni. Mm-hmm. And Pesach Sheni, there is absolutely no... Pesach Sheni, there's absolutely zero religious significance nowadays whatsoever. So you don't say Tachanun so you say Tachanun on Pesach Sheni. Right, so that's the Svardi Chassidish Minhag Al Pi Kabbalah, that these days still maintain a certain semblance of holiness and Kedusha, therefore they don't say Tachanun on those days. But again, people are looking for an excuse not to say Tachanun, so...
And they throw in the Rebbe's yard site, you never say Tachanun.
Right, but even... Right, if you go on the Rebbe's yard site, you never say Tachanun, right? It's not... halachically, it's not by practice, it's not to be sanctioned. But in any case, we have a lot of... I never understood it. In so many regular Ashkenazi shuls nowadays, they adopted the practice not to say Tachanun for 7 days after Shavuos, not to say Tachanun Pesach Sheni. Svardim also, Hasidim, they eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. So people, they don't, this is a cute, but it's not in halacha whatsoever. Like I said, zero Pesach Sheni. Right, okay. Well, probably not really baltos, if you know that it's not really a mitzvah. But also, they asked a question about that, is why do we eat matzah on Pesach Sheni? That's Yud Dalei Iyar, because the matzah was not eaten on Pesach Sheni. Matzah was eaten on the night after Pesach Sheni, because that's when you ate the Korban Pesach that you brought on Pesach Sheni, was the night after. But people don't do that. I'm sorry. V'yaser Pratei Medvarim Maseches Chagiga. It's all explained in Maseches Chagiga. Let's just finish up. V'noegis b'zman habayis, sometimes the base of Mikdash, v'zchar mevalo b'nekevos, for males, not females, because it says, Yera, it calls Zechurcha, all your male people, velo kol haschar, not even all the males. Shechiger, v'sume, a person who's lame or blind, even in one eye, afilu me'achas meina, v'chole, v'zokin, a sick person, and weak, who can't go up to Yerushalayim, v'onug harbe, if you're really spoiled, really, precise. She'enu yachol alos bragla. If you can't walk up the Har HaBayis yourself, you need to be driven in a taxi. I don't know what. Kulan pturin. They're all exempt. V'chein. Right. If you can't go up, or you're not, you have one of these psulim, like not psulim, but chigir, because you can't walk up with your own two legs, and suma because you can't see Har HaBayis. Lo yeroy kol zochurcha. We darshan from that. From that has to be shayach to seeing. V'chein tumtum va'joginus va'avodim. People of questionable gender and slaves, because they're not, they are in, they have the same halachic category as women, because they're not for sure male, not for sure free Jewish men. Aval kol shar ezcharim chayovim, all the rest of the males are chayev, afil yeshlan umnus mechuar, even if they have a disgusting occupation, kigon mekameitz, you collect dog dung for purposes, like they used to use it for tanning leather, things like that. Umitzareif, and a metal worker, metal, collect ore also. The Avdan and a tanner, Mitarin Gufan, they purify their bodies, Umal Bushan, and they wash their clothes. They only lift Nehash Shem Yisbarach, they go in front of God, even though it might offend other people who are there, because they might smell. They Mekubalan Lefan of Kishar, just do the best they can. They Mekubalan Lefan of Kishar Yisrael. God accepts them like other Jews. Shetinuf HaNefesh HaMamis B'nei Adam Lefnei HaMakam. God only cares about stains on your soul, and not stains on your body. That God doesn't care what your occupation is. What your occupation is, as long as you do it honestly. It's a big klal. The main thing God cares about is honesty, not how much money you make, or what type of occupation you're in. If you violate chagiga and you show up in the Beis Hamikdash beYom Rishon Shel Chag, on the first day of the festival, you didn't bring a korban. You violated both an ase and a los ase. What's the losa say? Shenemar alzev lo yeru panai rekam. You shall not see my face empty-handed. No, it's not shame b'maisa, because you just didn't do something. It's not an error of commission. It's an error of omission. No malchus.